If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's Friday here at the bottom tip. Well, it's Friday everywhere, but here where I am at the bottom tip of the African continent, it's still afternoon. Maybe it's not Friday in New Zealand. I don't know what time it is there. If it's past midnight, then it's certainly not Friday. So then my statement might actually hold true. Email me, germwarfare@tntradio.live, germwarfare@tntradio.live. And remember the rules. I deduct 10 points from your tally if you don't tell me where you are messaging me from. I like to know. I'm not data harvesting, I promise. I just like to know where people are listening from, since this is a global radio station. Jump into the live chat. It's on TNT's website, tntradio.live. I've actually got it open now in front of me. So if you want to engage, do say hello and ask questions and whatever else. Don't forget to download the TNT app. It's in the Google and Apple store. And by the way, man, how hectic, how brilliant, how funny was that boxing match between Alex Jones and Kanye West. That was the highlight of the year. I don't think I've ever seen anything that theatrical. I mean, think about this. A black guy, a black rapper defending a white nationalist. It is hilarious. I am of the opinion that the whole thing is just theater. It can't possibly be real. Both of those guys are entertainers. Let's never forget. Anyway, my name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Keeping the commitment.
I love you guys.
Unbelievable.
24/7.
Listen to you every day, have for years.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Benjamin Jonas van den Brink, thank you for joining me in the trenches. I hope I got your name right.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Man, I love that documentary. Well, you've got so much good work. Your directing is beautiful right off the bat. Let me just say that.
Wow. Thank you. That's a great compliment, man.
Okay. So State of Control is our sort of foundational talking point. But before we talk about that, what is your bio?
Well, I've been a movie director for like 20 years now. I started at MTV Networks, where I made small items, and that's kind of the place where they taught me how to do everything from filming to editing to directing. And when I kind of finished there, I went over to do more bigger television programs. As a freelancer, I kind of, well, not got famous, but it's a big program in the Netherlands. It's kind of the Dutch Jersey Shore. I don't know if you know the show Jersey Shore, but yes. I did that kind of stuff a lot, you know, like reality programs. And but I didn't enjoy that too much at a certain point, because I started hating myself for it, because kind of what you need to do is you put a group of people in a small space and you feed them some booze, and before you know it, they start fighting. And that's people always think that reality shows are not directed, but they definitely are. And that's the kind of thing you need to do constantly, is make conflict. And that's not really my cup of tea. So I decided to quit television all over, because once you're in a certain corner in television, then you have to stick to that, and you only get asked for more reality shows. So I had to really get out of there. And then I started making more commercials. I did a lot of commercials for big companies like Procter & Gamble and Coca-Cola and you name it. And also documentaries. And so this is my third documentary. And I think it's also the most, the biggest work I've done until now, actually, because it went sky high. It went, it went viral. So I'm happy about that.
And what is this newest documentary all about, State of Control?
Yeah, State of Control is actually a documentary about the digital identity and the central bank digital currency. And I did a half year research about these two topics because, well, I've kind of stumbled upon that these two are really interlinked, because if you want to introduce a central bank digital currency, you kind of need a digital identity. And these are two developments that are really recently, since the pandemic actually, are becoming more and more of a topic. And they are already in a far-reaching stadium of developing these technologies. And I think the general public is doesn't know anything about it. It's been kind of been till now been treated as sort of a conspiracy theory. But it's not, you know, there are already a lot of rules and regulations being put in place. And also Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the European Union, is already stated in her State of the Union talk that she wants to have this digital identity for all Europeans. And also the central bankers are in a far stadium of also developing this central bank digital currency. So I really wanted to make a documentary that creates more awareness about this topic, because it's also, people think it's kind of boring, you know, what do I care about my identity being online? And also they try to make it sound a little bit boring, like they could give it all different kind of names, but they chose to name it central bank digital currency, which kind of people think, okay, well, that's a good thing, right? Like same as cryptocurrencies, but it's not. It implies way more than most people think. So I thought this would definitely be a very good and even shocking documentary subject. And yeah, that's what it eventually also became. I think a lot of people that watch it are kind of shocked about the implications that these developments have.
Has making this documentary shifted your views on things?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, what I found most shocking actually is that everybody thinks, and also I did, like, we live in a democracy, and in a democracy you have the right of voting, and this reflects in the policies that eventually become ours, right? But what I kind of discovered is that even if, for instance, the Dutch parliament does not agree on certain aspects, for example, this digital currency, if they agree upon that it should not be programmable, that doesn't mean that it doesn't become programmable. So that means, that implies that central bankers, they have way more power than a lot of people think. And I thought that's very shocking. I spoke to one of the Dutch politicians who is the rapporteur of the central bank digital currency for the House of Representatives. And he is really fighting for more awareness, but he literally says that he doesn't even know what is being programmed in this coin. And there is also no way of stopping it, because somehow it gets lost in the bureaucratic process. And it just is implemented. And once it's implemented, there is no way of going back. And there's also no way of opting out. So yeah, I found that quite shocking. Yeah, that definitely was an eye opener for me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a difference, isn't it? Going from reality shows to that.
Yeah. You can say that. Yeah. I think for me, there was a big change when COVID happened. I'm really a mainstream director, you know. I make a lot of mainstream television programs, and I try to steer clear of any kind of conspiracy theories and stuff. But I thought that when the pandemic hit, there was such a big gap between the science and what the government in the Netherlands was implementing. And that created a huge gap in the society. Like for instance, I was a bit hesitant in taking the vaccines. And that meant that I was excluded for a long time from cinemas, from bars, from all social places. And I found that shocking. What is that? I didn't expect the government to do that in any circumstance, but yet they did. And it was there was a big university in Amsterdam that they proved that the policy that the government was doing, that it was counterproductive, that it didn't prevent the spread of the virus in any way. Yet they went ahead with doing these policies. So to me, it was obvious that they weren't doing it to prevent the spread of the virus. They were doing it to get people vaccinated. And this was so weird to me. It was a shocker to me. So then I kind of got aware. I woke up and I felt like, hey, there's more going on. What is this all about? And then I started researching it. And I met a producer who was also like-minded. He was also shocked, Max von Krefeld, great producer, makes a lot of documentaries. And we decided to team up, and he got the budget together to make this documentary, which is kind of, I mean, they introduced the Green Pass in Europe in order to travel around. You needed this app, this certificate downloaded on your app. And this was the thing that the first step actually for a digital identity with this green certificate. All this legislation was easily implemented without raising an eyebrow with the people.
That term conspiracy theory, though, has been completely abused because. Yeah. It's used in a derogatory sense or a pejorative sense, but the reality is that there's nothing wrong with being called that. And for some weird reason, we have this aversion to that label. You know, if you think about it, these are not theories anyway. CBDCs are real. These are not theories.
Yeah, but yet... It's still there. The society has been split in almost in two camps. You know, there's just some topics that you cannot talk about anymore. And the first thing that people point to is that you're a conspiracy theorist. So, yeah, I hate that term as well. it really sucks actually. I prefer referring to myself as a thorough journalist, as a research journalist. Yeah,
I miss the good old days before COVID when I was labeled a sexist or a racist. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. These days it's just conspiracy theorist. Like, come on guys, be a bit more original. Let's go back
more original,
a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, like, what happened to being called homophobic? You know, like, I miss those days.
Yeah. Well, make a couple more cartoons, I guess.
Look, I often wonder, though, that when you make a documentary like State of Control, it's very polarized in terms of your other work. I mean, this is not Coca-Cola. This is not Procter & Gamble kind of stuff. Now, if those clients see this work, does that put your future with them on the line?
Well, I think not, actually, because the documentary is very, very thoroughly researched. At least that's what I tried. And everybody that watched it are very positive, even on social media. I have not yet heard anybody say like, okay, this is not true, or this is... I mean, I think everybody knows that these are very worrying innovations and that we should be alarmed in any way. So, yeah. And also now in the Netherlands, it's actually... the timing was impeccable, because now the debate, even in the House of Representatives, is very active. So it is a mainstream topic. It's only not really highlighted that much, but it will be, definitely. Like when the documentary in the Netherlands premiered, the next day was a debate, a big debate. Well, actually, they underestimated the size of it because in the Netherlands, the debates are public, so you can visit the House of Representatives. And they only booked a small room. And usually for a big debate, they have to use the plenary room. This is a big room and a lot of people can get in. But almost half or more people were not allowed to enter the building because it was full. So I'm not saying that it's because of my documentary. I hope so. But it's becoming a hot topic, you know. And this is a good thing because now people are waking up and seeing that it is kind of a slippery slope where we're heading towards. And this more discussion about it is needed.
Mm. Okay, Benjamin, I'll be back with you after this break.
You should hear what Mike Ryan's talking about.
I can tell you, it's very shocking. Shows you our moral compass is just gone haywire. Climate activists are now calling for millions of dogs worldwide to be slaughtered in an effort to reduce the carbon paw print they produce as a result of eating meat. According to a recent CNN column, dogs, cats, and other domestic meat-eating pets are devastating Earth's climate. In the last few years, the level of urgency to save the planet coming from the mainstream media and globalist elites have intensified to dizzying new heights. From the early warnings of don't shower every day to today's open discussions about eugenics, trying to deface iconic works of art is sadly just the start. They are now trying to openly kill our pets and will eventually move on to humans too. The world has just gone nuts.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated more than $310 million to mainstream media. We don't tell the story that Bill Gates wants you to know. We tell the real story. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Benjamin, just to let you know, there are people listening from, well, someone is listening from, where did I see this now? I'm just in the live chat and I'm just quickly scrolling up. There are quite a lot of comments here. Someone is in New Zealand. Oh, and someone says that it's Saturday in New Zealand. when I opened the show, I said that it's Friday everywhere. As it turns out, it isn't. And someone is saying that they're going to hold on to their cash. And that's one of the threads that comes through in the last few years. I mean, Catherine Austin Fitz is in your documentary and she's brilliant on this particular aspect, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. She's a powerhouse. I interviewed her and there's not much you can say to her actually to direct her. You ask her a question and she gives a different answer, but it's always brilliant. And you always say yes, amen afterwards. If she says something, you definitely believe her. So that I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to interview her. And she knows. Just a lot. She's been high up in that tree. She is a ex or she is still a American investment banker and was ex assistant secretary of housing during the Bush the first Bush administration. So she knows stuff, you know, and she's definitely very, very worried about these developments. And she basically says it is a control grid and there's just a few small pieces of the puzzle needed to be put in place, and then it snaps into a digital concentration camp. Now that's these are very heavy words, of course. But yeah, also one of the things she definitely says as the solution is to pull ourselves out of the digital system, take it analog, and cash is a big aspect of that. Yeah, we have to assert our right to use cash and remain using cash. Because it's a two-edged sword also, eh? like people, they don't want to use cash anymore because it's very convenient not to use cash and only use your PIN card or your fintech device or whatever. But it's not a good thing to get rid of cash.
Problem is that carrying cash sucks. You're correct and she's correct. And we all know that you need to hold onto cash if you want to remain resistant to the digital grid. But carrying cash just honestly sucks.
Yeah, that's true. Even me, I have a hard time to keep on using cash. I'm aware of that we should use more cash. But yeah, by not using cash, we give a whole lot of power to the commercial banks in this case, because all of the digital money is in the hands of commercial banks. It's like digital tokens that we pay for, and then we can use those digital tokens, and it's basically their money that we're using. It's not your money, you know. What the cash is the only method of having a totally private and a totally secure way of using your own money. And now this new digital bank currency, then the power becomes of the central bankers. This kind of money is from the central bankers, eventually making commercial banks not necessary anymore. So this is a huge power shift from commercial banks towards central banks. It could be a blessing also, a central bank digital currency, if it would be exactly the same as physical money, but then not programmable, not traceable. It could be a blessing because it would make these commercial banks that are not very good stewards of our money, proven in the 2008 financial crisis. They were investing in all kinds of stuff that is not so good for us. And they collapsed and we had to save them with our money, with our tax. So it could be a blessing, but the way it's implementing at the moment, it's definitely going to be a very controlled mechanism of our cash. Yeah.
I've heard that a really good investment of your money is FTX.
I'm not really into cryptos at the moment.
That was a joke.
FTX, what is FTX?
It's that massive crash that happened recently. That crypto crash.
Oh, right.
Crash.
Yeah, okay, well, but I have to be honest.
It's not so funny. It's not so funny if I have to explain it.
No, you know what the thing is? Once I finished this documentary, I kind of pulled my hands off any kind of news, and I'm basically on a digital holiday myself.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being on, never mind a digital holiday, but a holiday in general, because the last few years, Benjamin, haven't you found, have just been so dark and draining?
Definitely. Yeah. Even working on this documentary, I did it together with a very good researcher, and she kind of bombarded me with every single news item that popped up on this topic. And it kind of makes you sick. If you are too deep in all these news items and all these innovations that are happening, then you see the whole picture. And that's a kind of a nasty picture, yeah. And that's also the thing with news, I guess, that it always focuses on the negative and not really on the positive, because the positive doesn't really sell, you know. And that tends to make you a bit depressed. Yeah.
Funnily enough, though, People on our side also focus very much on the negative. It's all about how the globalists are coming for us, etc. So it's also very sensational in many ways, don't you find?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. I've been speaking with a lot of alternative news networks. And it's always a bit the same as what the mainstream does, but then from the other direction, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Tell you what, let me just quickly do the news headlines, Benjamin. I'll be back with you in a moment.
Deadline. TNT Radio News.
Big news.
Yeah!
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. France has admitted it has run out of weapons to send to Ukraine as the endless flow of arms to Kyiv begins depleting Western stockpiles. Russia has warned the world is at risk of sliding into nuclear war. And the Pentagon has claimed China is trying to erode America's influence in the Asia-Pacific region as Beijing draws attention to last year's chaotic withdrawal of US troops from Afghanistan.
For all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
Benjamin.
Yeah.
In the live chat, Manchester Girl 65 says, one customer paid in pound coins worth £50, and I didn't enjoy counting it. I can't imagine buying a car with cash.
No. Yeah, that's impossible.
In fact, you'll walk there with a suitcase, a briefcase with money in it, and somebody's going to actually think that you're carrying a bomb or something from a movie, you know? It just doesn't look right.
No, it's very in the Netherlands, for instance, that they're really trying to restrict getting out too much cash, even, you know, it's that they're trying to limit that in any way. You cannot even get out more than I think 5,000 euros at a time.
Let's go back to your documentary. Tell me about some of the interesting people you interviewed. I know Catherine is one of them. I think James Corbett is also another one of them.
Yeah. James Corbett. Yeah, he's a great guy. Very, very approachable also. I emailed him if he wanted to do an interview. He replied, I think, the same day. And he was, oh, yeah, sure. Why not? So, but he's one of my heroes, definitely. It's when I tried to edit him to cut up to make his story a little bit shorter, it was almost impossible because he has such a rich vocabulary that it's impossible to cut something out. So I had to leave very big chunks of his story in there. But he has so much knowledge and he is so thorough in his research that I couldn't even equal that a little bit, I think. So I definitely had to put him in and also promote his work because he made such a great documentaries. Like how big oil conquered the world. Yeah, who else? Like this Christian Teres. He is a he's MP in the European Parliament, and he grew up during the restrictive government of Ceausescu. Like he grew up in like a communist repressive state, and so he sees really the patterns of what is now happening in Europe. He compares it to what was happening during the Ceausescu regime, and he's very alarmed by these new innovations also. And Mahir Akaya, he is a Dutch politician, what I talked about before. He's also keen on this central bank digital currency. And also from Privacy International and Privacy First, I spoke to a couple of people that have a lot of knowledge on these developments. But I also spoke to like a South African professor, Co-Pierre George, who is actually working on the central bank digital currency. And although he really sees the benefits, of course, of these new innovations, but he's also worried about the privacy and freedom concerns. So it was good to hear also his side of the story. Who else is in there?
Someone in the live chat, Benjamin, is saying that they're listening from Bermuda. You know what's funny about that is when I was growing up, I always heard about aliens and planes falling out of the sky in that particular region of the world. So I'm convinced that whoever's listening from Bermuda is not actually listening from Bermuda. That's a conspiracy theory.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Someone in the live chat's asking, why am I laughing at the thought of legal tender? I don't quite understand the question. I think I'm just laughing at the fact that if you're going to buy a car and you want to pay cash, I mean, that's a lot of money physically to carry with you. This is precisely why we ended up with, with bigger notes or other ways of transacting, because it's just a lot of cash. I mean, if you come from Zimbabwe, you have to, literally put cash into a wheelbarrow because it's so useless, so worthless, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And the funny thing, though, is that as much as we both know that, digital can become problematic, it is very nice to just tap with your phone, for example.
Yeah, definitely. Of course. I mean, it's like I said, it's a two-edged sword. It's very convenient to have everything in one app and to be able to pay with everything via one system. But in the meantime, this puts technology in place that makes it easy for governments to track, trace, and database you. And they're promising not that they're not going to do that, but for instance, if there is an ill-minded government that comes into place, then it's very easy for these kind of technologies to be used against the public. And we've seen that during the pandemic, like in Canada, what Trudeau did by blocking the truckers, the Freedom Convoy, by blocking their accounts. That will be way more easier if everything will be digital. If the whole payment system is digital and cash money is totally gone, then this would be done with a push of the button. And I mean, history proves that they can promise that they're not going to do that, but there is only something has to happen, and then it's going to be very easy for that. And also, people slowly get used to that. They slowly get used to not using cash. They're getting used to leaving their privacy all over the place, by using social media apps and not having their security in place. So, yeah, we're slowly going there. I don't see it as really a conspiracy, but more of a streaming, like a natural flow.
Emergence.
Emergence, yeah, yeah. Mm. So I think the first thing that needs to be done is awareness about this, and people should be aware that's why they made a documentary about it, because if you see the whole picture, if you see all these little small pieces of the puzzle falling into place, then you get the whole picture and you see, oh, wait a minute, this is very scary stuff, but then still the solution, it's very hard. There's a lot of solutions that people... There's a lot of stuff that people can do, of course, but there's not one key aspect that everybody should do or something. That's not the case.
Obviously, you are referring to central bank digital currencies, but like me, are you torn when it comes to cryptocurrencies, let's say Bitcoin or Ethereum, etc., which is decentralized?
All right. Yeah.
Yes. I'm not. I flip flop. I don't know where I stand on those sorts of currencies because they are decentralized.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, definitely. I think the more different methods of payment in the financial system, the more you can spread your risks, right? And the less power is at one place. Because if you own the currency, you own the world. I think also people underestimate this. That's why central bankers, they are very powerful. And I think central bankers, they have been losing a lot of power because they kind of recent, like Professor Richard Werner, he's an economist and a professor. He kind of found out that the money creation is way more at the commercial banks. So this was kind of, this is more a theory of mine, but I think that's a very worrying revelation for central bankers also. Like, wait a minute, we're losing a lot of power, you know? And so the central bank digital currency will give them back this ultimate power. And even the managing director of the Bank of International Settlements, he also stated it in on Twitter, I think, in this video, basically really telling the people, like hiding it in plain sight, sort of, that they want absolute control over all the cash. So that's what they're aiming towards, and that's not a good thing. So, yeah, what I'm trying to say is that it's good to have your assets spread, and like in uncertain times, that's why people always flee to gold. But cryptocurrencies is also a little, like, put your small amount of money into cryptocurrencies and into cash, and spread your risks a little bit, and this will reduce the power of the elites, sort of.
I think the gentleman to whom you are referring is Augustine Carstens.
Carstens, yeah, that's right.
He's so fat that he doesn't fit on the TV screen.
No, and he doesn't strike me as a very influential person. That's what I find funny when I look at him. I think, like, oh, you're not the guy in control, are you?
No, but he really is.
The messenger. Yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah. I think so. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the reason why he's like that is probably because he's eaten all the messengers and he's eaten all the money.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's also one of the things I've come to realize, Benjamin, in the last 2 years, is that a lot of the people whose faces you see all the time, they're not really the ones you should worry about. You know, we get annoyed at Klaus Schwab and we get irritated at Bill Gates and Fauci, we all hate equally. But they're not really the important players. It's the ones who are in the shadows, like Augustine Carstens and others whose names we don't know half the time. They are the ones driving the whole thing.
Yeah. It's very hard to pinpoint just one or two people that are doing this. I think these plans are being approached from multi directions, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. It's a very, I think even for those people in control, it's sometimes confusing on how to get their goals reached, I guess. But yeah, sure. The people that do the most or get the most done, they are definitely in the shadows. You don't hear anything about, and that's really on purpose, I think. Yeah.
What were some of your highlights while making the documentary? Surely you must have some very fond memories, and of course some ones that you would look back and laugh at.
I think like I got to interview also the ex director of the central bank in the Netherlands. So I think it was great to have such a, also because I was from the mainstream media, I guess that people are very open. To talk to me freely, and I really got to interview them really in depth. So that was just a great opportunity. But really funny moments. I don't remember directly now. No, I was just sometimes in awe of what people said. Mm. Like, I also interviewed Annie Michon. She's an ex-MI5 spy, and she was a whistleblower uncovering the assassination plots on Gaddafi, which the British government was involved in. They paid, I don't know how many pounds, to get Gaddafi assassinated. And she blew the whistle on that. This has all been covered up. But the stuff she said, wow, that was mind-blowing. Now she is an expert on cybersecurity, and she really could tell me very thoroughly on what extent governments can eavesdrop on us. And people always think, okay, they're promising that our data will be safe online or anywhere. But this is total bullshit. It's never been safe, and it's not safe at the moment. Like that's what Edward Snowden also blew the whistle on, that the US was eavesdropping on the whole world, basically. And of course, they're still doing that, you know. So now Ursula von der Leyen says, okay, we're going to make this digital identity work for all Europeans, and we want it to be safe. But just by saying that, it's definitely not going to be safe. And that was also a huge eye-opener for me.
All right, Benjamin, I quickly need to do my last ad break, so I'll be back with you now.
United Nations climate activists and delegates at the summit in Egypt chow down on gourmet meat while telling the rest of us to eat bugs.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
According to a report in the UK Daily Mail, officials and delegates at the United Nations Climate Summit were able to dine on an array of pricey meat and fish dishes served up during the conference. Angus beef medallion with sautéed potatoes, creamy salmon. The pricey menu did not go unnoticed by animal rights activists. The Animal Rebellion replied that this was a slap in the face. These world leaders need to look like they believe the rules. And Animal Rebellion added, quote, "This just looks like do what I say and not what I do." So the next time the United Nations or the World Health Organization is telling you to eat the bugs, just remind them that hypocrisy is live and well at United Nations climate summits. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
A new research by John R. Lott Jr., president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Public Choice, found evidence of around 255,000 excess votes, possibly as many as 368,000 for Joe Biden in six swing states where Donald Trump lodged accusations of fraud. Biden only carries these states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, by a total of 313,253 votes. Excluding Michigan, the gap was 159,065. Courts have rejected challenges to the 2020 presidential vote, generally citing the lack of evidence that any alleged fraud would have altered the outcome in a particular state. Republican plaintiffs argued that since their observers couldn't watch the vote counts or were prevented from seeing other evidence, they couldn't provide such proof without investigations backed by subpoena power. Still, while some judges have agreed that irregularities occurred in 2020, they weren't willing to grant discovery in the absence of evidence that fraud could reverse the election results.
TNT Radio.
Alexa is like a personal secretary.
Thank you.
Just without the HR visit when you slap her on the butt.
I smell a lawsuit. Whoa.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
All right, Benjamin. Lots of people commenting. But I want to ask you a quick question. You've mentioned mainstream media a few times, and something I've thought about. I think it's a very loaded term, but let's just go back to basics. When we talk about mainstream media, what do we mean?
Huh. Yeah, that's a difficult question, eh? I'm not sure, actually. I think there's a whole bunch of new media that popped up that are daring to talk about subjects that the mainstream media, quote unquote, are not daring to talk about.
Mm.
But that's to me, it was really strange to notice this. I mean, I've never noticed that before. Of course, this was happening before, but during the pandemic, all of a sudden, there were some topics that were just off limits. And if you were talking about those topics, you'll be discredited, you know, you'll be blacklisted or ridiculed or even censored and banned from certain sites. So, and I think this process really accelerated during the pandemic. And now you just basically have two camps, which are the mainstream media and the alternative media. But I think this might have happened in history before. During the Second World War, you also had like small newspapers that were covering different news than what the mainstream was covering. And they turned out, like in the Netherlands, we have a newspaper that is now a mainstream newspaper, but it used to be a undercover a newspaper. So maybe this is a thing that has been happening all over in time.
Because I was just thinking about this while you were talking. I don't think mainstream is necessarily a bad thing. I know that these days it's widely, you know, criticized and rejected by people on, shall we say, our side. But I mean, if you think about it, Joe Rogan is mainstream. He's got a bigger audience than CNN and Fox essentially combined.
Yeah.
But he still has a sense of independence that they don't have. And I think if you're in the mainstream, so to speak, you also have the advantage of being able to, like you, interview people who otherwise might not accept the invitation. Let's think of Alex Jones. I could guarantee you there will be a lot of people that just will not go anywhere near him. So while some might think that's a good thing, if you want to get somebody like, let's say, Augustine Carstens onto your show, you probably need to be in the mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's why I try to make a documentary for a very broad public. And I mean, there's also a lot of new media sites that are just doing too much suggestion. You know, they are not sticking to the facts. And I think if you stick to the facts, then you get a better chance of reaching a broad public. And I think Joe Rogan also does that. You know, he just asks questions and also keeps on asking them, not assuming too much, you know, and that's where I think he sticks to a great crowd also.
I've interviewed a few hundred people, and one thing I've realized, tell me if you can relate to this, but one thing I've realized is that the more people I speak to, like yourself, the more I realize how little I know.
That's always true. Like in the beginning, when you start researching something, you think you've got it all figured out. And once you go deeper down that rabbit hole, it becomes a whole lot more complicated. And it's also, it's not that simple mostly. You know, there's a whole different aspects and stakeholders. And so, yeah, I've been down that rabbit hole also. I thought, oh, wait a minute. Like at a certain point, I was like, okay, but the central bank digital currency, this guy says that it's a very, very positive thing. You know, it could really help reduce the power of the commercial banks, and that's a good thing, right? You know, but on the other hand, it's too much control of the central banker. So, yeah, that's always good to keep in mind. Things are not black and white. They are also gray. Yeah.
Very nuanced. Mm.
Yeah.
Catherine actually makes the point that it's silly to try and be a Luddite, to just to outright reject all these changes, because you'll end up living in a tree, you know, with no technology around you. And as she says, technology is a wonderful thing. You have to kind of learn how to discern how to and when to use it.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I mean, you cannot go back to being a caveman, you know, and that's nobody's going to do that. Also, technology can also be used towards our advantage. I really, because all this technology drives us. It's like a sort of a pyramid system, you know. That's also our whole monetary system is aimed towards more centralized control. And I think that's not a good thing because, yeah, then you only need more rules and regulations to steer all those people in the right direction. If we can aim towards more a bottom-up society where we are in control of our own decisions and our own small communities, maybe even pay with our smaller own currencies and that kind of stuff, then we can really profit and benefit from that. And I've even in the financial crisis, you saw that countries with smaller community banks like Germany, they were not that much hurt by the financial crisis. The countries like the Netherlands, where we had big centralized banks, they fell and they had to be saved with our money, you know. So and the whole society and the whole technology makes it possible to really centralize everything, which is very worrying. But the same technology can also be used to use it for our smaller communities. For instance, you can now, with a small app, you can use it to borrow a sewing machine from your neighbor that you've never met before. You know, these are small things that we can benefit from. And yeah.
Okay, Benjamin. So that. We've got about 4 minutes, so let's do the last one. What would you like people to take away from State of Control, which, by the way, is stateofcontrol.nl?
Yeah, stateofcontrol.nl. Yeah, please go and watch a movie, of course. I would really like that. Awareness, that's the first thing. People need to be aware of the risks that it is, you know. That's the first step. And be aware of that cash is a good thing. It's not only, it doesn't need to be only cash, but just use cash once a week or just once in a while, you know, that, because it's very important to have the right to use cash. If it totally disappears, then we are in big trouble. And that's definitely the thing that I would like people to take away. But it counts also for the whole digital system. People should be aware of where they invest their time and their money. For instance, before I was at a bank, which is renowned in the Netherlands, the ING Bank is renowned for being very investing in very bad stuff, you know, in the weapon industry and that kind of stuff. Pull your cash and your time out of those kind of systems and put it in a place where you know that it's been treated good, you know, and then we can create together, we can create a very positive society, I think.
Okay, Benjamin, where can I follow your work?
Well, my name is Benjamin Jonas, and that's also my website, benjamin.jonas.com. And the documentary is stateofcontrol.nl. And we'll be making more documentaries. Actually, I'm working on a new subject. I cannot tell not yet what it is about, but it will be released on Debunk Productions shortly. Well, not sure if he has to make it.
Yeah. Benjamin Jonas, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody in the live chat. Wow, lots of comments. I like this one from Holly. Yes, but remember who owns the technology and how they can just turn it off. And that is a good point. Alternatives and competition are very good. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. So I definitely agree with you, Holly. Manchester Girl says it's trying to work out which ones are compromised, and that I agree with as well. You know, you want to hear the voices. You don't want people silenced or cancelled, even if you think that they are shills, which is a term that I often see. But you still need to listen to them because they might be giving you a truth. Augustine Carstens is the head of the BIS. You need to listen to him. It's a very bad idea to ignore him because he's literally telling you what they want to do, you know, and so you need to be able to not completely switch off, because you'll only end up listening to alternative or independent voices, but they need to get their information from somewhere. And generally speaking, it comes from the mainstream. And I think in the mainstream also, there is just a time frame before something does become mainstream. So if it starts out on the fringes or on the sort of the outlying positions, much like a conspiracy theory, it eventually makes its way into the zeitgeist. Thank you, Luke, for keeping the show going. Appreciate your work. Despite the fact that you are an Aussie, send me an email, jimwolfe@tntradio.live. Jump into the live chat on tntradio.live. And don't forget to download the app. I will see you in the next hour. It's been a pleasure chatting to Benjamin Jonas. My name is Jim. This is Jim Wolfe, the Battle of Ideas.